Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 26th. Pfluger files bill to repeal natural gas tax. Congressman says bill would drive up home energy costs. The story was written by Mella McEwen. They haven't yet taken effect, but Congressman August Pfluger wants to ensure methane fees included in the Inflation Reduction Act signed last year never come to pass. The Republican, who represents Texas's District 11, which includes much of the Permian Basin, has introduced H.R. 484, the Natural Gas Tax Repeal Act, to strike down the fee in what he called the Inflation Expansion Act. He said new fees on taxes on energy companies will raise costs for customers, creating a burden that will fall most heavily on lower-income Americans. Quote, President Biden's promise to end fossil fuels and ensuing actions to cripple the American energy industry are hurting American families. I am proud to stand up for the Permian Basin by introducing legislation to strike the president's new harmful natural gas tax that will drive up the cost of household energy bills and make inflation even worse, Pfluger said in a statement. His legislation has the support of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association and the Texas Public Policy Foundation, the TPPF, Life Powered Project. Ben Shepherd, PBPA president, said in a statement, quote, Congressman Pfluger continues to fight for the American people, the American economy, and American energy security. Worldwide demand for natural gas continues to grow, and the American people, our economy, and even the world's environment are better off when domestic natural gas production is supported by those in Washington, D.C. This act does just that, end quote. Added Jason Isaac, director of Life Powered at TPPF, quote, Life Powered applauds Representative Pfluger on his efforts to repeal the methane tax created by the Inflation Reduction Act. 32% of Americans have paid a utility bill late in the past 6 months, and imposing a methane tax couldn't happen at a worse time. Repealing this burdensome home heating and stovetop cooking tax will prevent another unnecessary cost from being imposed on Americans struggling to make ends meet, end quote. Under the legislation signed into law last August, the methane fee would be applied to petroleum and natural gas facilities already subject to greenhouse gas emission reporting under Environmental Protection Agency reporting regulations. It would apply to applicable facilities, including onshore petroleum and gas production, gathering and boosting, natural gas processing, transmission, compression, and transmission pipelines. It would be applied to those facilities reporting more than 25,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent per year. The Act requires the EPA revise its Subpart W reporting regulation within 2 years to ensure reported emissions are based on empirical data and accurately reflect the total methane emissions and waste emissions. Fees begin at $900 per metric ton beginning in 2024 and rising to $1,500 at the beginning of 2026. Enverus Intelligence Research, part of the energy-focused software-as-a-service firm Enverus, said in a report earlier this month, any impact of the fee is expected to be minimal to the industry, as most oil and natural gas operators will get below the threshold before the 2025 implementation date based on 2024 data. Pfluger, Texas GOP delegation, Call for Assistance at Border. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Congressman August Pfluger was part of a delegation of Texas Republicans that sent a letter to President Biden urging assistance at the southern border and reimbursement for Texas dollars spent on Operation Lone Star, according to a press release on Tuesday. The letter is also signed by every member of the Republican Texas delegation, Representatives Stan Crenshaw, Brian Babin, Nathaniel Moran, Michael T. McCall, Beth Van Dunn, Lance Gooden, Keith Self, Monica De La Cruz, Pete Sessions, Morgan Luttrell, Jake Elzey, Ronnie L. Jackson, Michael C. Burgess, M.D., Michael Cloud, Randy K. Weber, Sr., Roger Williams, Kay Granger, Wesley Hunt, John Carter, and Troy E. Nels, the press release states. Quote, "We urge you, President Biden, to work with the Texas delegation to pay Texas back for the resources expended throughout Operation Lone Star, and we urge you to work with us to stop the flow of illegal migration at the southern border. Further, we also request a meeting with you to discuss the border crisis and the solutions proposed by members of the Texas delegation to put an end to this crisis," the members wrote. The Texas Republicans wrote that the state of the southern border is due to the Biden administration's failed policies. "For the last 2 years, the members of the delegation wrote, "the state of Texas has been forced to take unprecedented steps to address the southern border. Governor Greg Abbott started Operation Lone Star in March 2021. Dufford calls out Corrales for "Midland is not for sale" comment. "Midland is not for sale" has got to be one of the most uninformed and certainly the dumbest comment I have ever heard come out of a councilman's mouth. Scott Dufford, councilman. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Quote, "This city is not for sale," unquote. This is how Dan Corrales wrapped his comments in opposition of the Hogan Park project and the agreement with the Permian Basin Quality of Place Conservancy. It was a comment that caught some people off guard, including Councilman Scott Dufford, who told the Reporter-Telegram, quote, "Midland is not for sale" has got to be one of the most uninformed and certainly the dumbest comment I have ever heard come out of a councilman's mouth, end quote. Dufford, the dean of the current council with more than 20 years' experience, then rattled off partnership projects between the city and oil companies and foundations. They include the partnership with Pioneer Natural Resources allowed the city of Midland to upgrade its wastewater plant. Pioneer provided $134 million. The city of Midland didn't have to use utilities fund revenue. In 2016, Occidental Petroleum Corporation donated 6 miles of roadway in North Midland that will allow Midland to have an east-west corridor to help handle the growth in future decades. The Scarborough Foundation helped play a role in the MDC's recruitment of a Texas Tech University Health Science Center psychiatric center near Midland Memorial Hospital. While much of the heavy lifting was done by the MDC, the Scarborough Foundation offered $600,000 to fund renovations. A more substantial Scarborough donation came at the turn of the century when the Scarborough family donated 100 acres in West Midland. The land became the home of the Scarborough Sports Complex. Heading back to downtown, the Scarborough Foundation and Contra Resources combined for $10 million of the private money raised to make the Centennial Park a reality. XTO donated $500,000 for the Dennis the Menace Park project. Dufford spoke positively about how oil and gas contributed to the city of Midland, including the tens of millions of dollars from oil production that will benefit City of Midland parks. City of Midland officials put that number at more than $25 million from oil and gas royalty revenues since the start of fiscal year 2022. A quick look at other donations made to taxing entities from oil companies or foundations show more meaningful philanthropy in education and healthcare. Some highlights here included a $10 million check from the Scarber Foundation to Midland ISD to help deal with district's budget deficit in 2016. In 2014, 8 oil companies and foundations partnered with Midland ISD to provide $6.2 million in signing and re-signing bonuses for MISD teachers. Last year, the Permian Strategic Partnership and Scarber Foundation combined to donate $20 million for the construction of a $30 million home for the new Pre-K Academy and Early Childhood Education Program at Midland College. The center will be a home to the youngest of students in Midland, and the Early Childhood Education Program will allow for teaching candidates to receive a bachelor's degree in early childhood education and hopefully help build a teaching workforce in the region. The list can go on from Diamondback STEM programs and work to plant trees in City of Midland parks to Pioneer's work with the West Texas Food Bank to set up food pantries inside Midland ISD schools. Not all foundations or oil companies were part of the Quality of Place fundraising. Donors included Mabee Foundation, $5 million, Diamondback Energy, $2.5 million, Pioneer Natural Resources, $2.5 million, Texas Pacific Land Corporation, $1 million, ConocoPhillips, $1 million. The Reporter Telegram reached out to Corrales about his comment. There was no response.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 26th, 2023. Culture. Fast Fun Facts. Empty Bowls Fundraiser by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Who and what? The 22nd Annual Empty Bowls Fundraiser, benefiting the West Texas Food Bank. When? Saturday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Where? Midland College's McCormick Gallery, 3600 North Garfield. How? $15 admission at the door or at https://bit.ly/3jgy4wo. A $500 donation for a table of 8. The Scoop. Patrons can expect handmade ceramic bowls created by students and faculty from Midland College, Odessa College, the University of Texas Permian Basin, Trinity School of Midland, Boys and Girls Club of the Permian Basin, and UTPB STEM Academy. The all-you-can-eat soup event remains a Tall City staple, not only because of the fun ceramic party favor, but because of the longtime community support and love for the West Texas Food Bank. Three Things to Do in Midland This Weekend by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Sing the night away. Looking for a way to karaoke your heart out but don't want to stand solo on stage? The Broken Horn Bar and Grill will host Flight of the Keys, Band and Dueling Pianos, a 3.5-hour production of audience-picked sing-along songs sure to entertain guests with backgrounds of all music abilities. Other restaurant amenities include multiple pool tables, TVs, and a large garage-like area that is comfortable and inviting. Tickets for the event run at $25 each and can be bought at https://bit.ly/3xdn4xo. Friday, 8:30 p.m. to midnight, 111 East County Road, 132. Add four more legs to the fam. Whether you're looking to officially adopt a new furry friend or have the space to temporarily foster, head to Eccentric Brewing's Barks and Brew event to put your plans in action. Partnering with Permian Basin Animal Advocates, a no-kill nonprofit, Eccentric will offer free leashes and drink tokens to those adopting or fostering. Furthermore, raffle prizes will be given out, along with pup cups, delicious whipped cream treats, and PBAA merchandise. Other dogs welcome. To learn more about PBAA, Permian Basin Animal Advocates, visit www.pbanimaladvocates.com. Saturday, 1 to 4 p.m., 1402 Cotton Flat Road, Eccentric Brewing Company. Prep for wedding season. Whether you just got engaged over the holidays or maybe know someone celebrating a quinceañera, the 2023 West Texas Wedding Expo has every bridal or birthday party member covered. More than 100 booths, packed with gowns, accessories, photography packages, and more, fashion shows, and $10,000 worth of raffle prizes will fill the Horseshoe Pavilion for a full day of party-themed planning and fun. Tickets range from $5 to $20 and can be bought at www.wtbridal.com/entry tickets. More information about the expo can be found at www.wtbridal.com. Sunday, noon to 4, at 2514 Arena Trail, The Horseshoe. What's Up in Midland, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Broken Horn Productions, Flight of the Keys, Band and Dueling Pianos, Friday. At City Nights, Hayden Haddock, Saturday. At Eccentric Brewing Company, Barks and Brews, Saturday. At Far West Coffee, 5-year birthday party, Saturday. At the Horseshoe, West Texas Wedding Expo, Sunday. At La Hacienda Event Center, Laberinto, Friday. At Midland College, Empty Bowls, Saturday. At Museum of the Southwest, New Exhibits Opening Reception, Members Only, January 31st. At Tall City Brewing Company, 3 beer releases in January. Venezia Restaurant, Casey Greathouse, Friday and Saturday. At the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, Aaron Lewis, Friday. Fortune Feimster, Sunday.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 26th. Helen Joyce Kimbrell went to be with the Lord on January 17th, born to Lorena and Fred Moore on June 13, 1940, in Roscoe, Texas. Helen blessed this world for 82 years with her love, kindness, grace, and beautiful smile. Helen moved with her family to Odessa, Texas during her teen years and later began her family of 6 children. Helen and her family moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Scottsdale, Arizona, before moving back to West Texas in 1970, where she would live for the remainder of her life. Helen met the love of her life, Jeff Kimbrell, in 1980. They married in 1981. Most of Helen's career was as a human resources manager at Compressor Systems Incorporated. Helen is survived by her daughters, Dana Reyes and Pam Montgomery, and husband Rick, son John O. Salisbury, son Todd Salisbury and wife Lori, son J. Salisbury and wife Tracy, 16 grandchildren, and 20 great-grandchildren. Helen was preceded in death by husband Jeff Kimbrell, sister Louise McCauley, brothers Bob Moore and Mike Moore, son Dale Salisbury, and grandson Benjamin Montgomery. Memorial service will be held at 3 p.m. Saturday, January 28th, at Christ Church Anglican. The family burial will be private. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that you consider donating to Christ Church Anglican in Midland or to the American Legion Auxiliary Unit 19 in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. John Michael Vasquez Jr., age 17, of Stanton, passed away on January 22nd. Viewing will be on Wednesday, January 25th, from 10 a.m. until 8 p.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Viewing on Thursday, January 26th, will be from 9 a.m. until 12 p.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held on Thursday, January 26th at 2 p.m. at Stanton High School Auditorium. Interment will follow at Evergreen Cemetery. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Funeral Home. Online condolences can be received at www.stantonfh.com. Wanda Dale Berry, age 80, of Midland, passed away January 24th. Celebration of life will be held at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, January 26th. Lawyers blast counsel for considering termination. Counsel takes no action, tables opening position. The Odessa City Council came out of executive session Tuesday night without taking any action regarding Municipal Court Judge Carlos Rodriguez and then tabled any discussion about accepting applications for his position. Rumors were rampant the council was going to fire Rodriguez because he allegedly got sideways with Mayor Javier Hoven over an email he sent to Rodriguez and Associate Judge Keith Kidd in June regarding Operation Graduation. People were concerned since Rodriguez was evaluated in October, just as City Attorney Natasha Brooks and City Manager Michael Marrero were. Brooks and Marrero were terminated December 13th. In the letter, Hoven wrote, "I request that you consider the maximum penalty for any social host violations and for any minor in possession citations." There was also speculation as to whether unlawful access to juvenile court records was being given to council members, especially Denise Swanner, who is the assistant teen court coordinator. Prior to going into executive session, three local attorneys, Gavin Norris, Anthony Robles, and Jason Skoll, took the opportunity to support Rodriguez and voice concerns. Robles also expressed his displeasure the council was getting ready to sign contracts with interim city attorney Dan Jones and interim city manager Agapito for figures he did not consider fiscally responsible when Hoven, Swanner, and Councilmember Mark Mata promised to be fiscally responsible when on the campaign trail. The contracts will pay Jones $3,269.23 per week and give him a $600 a month car allowance. Bernal is to be paid $3,846.15 per week and he'll get the same car allowance. Robles repeatedly asked Hoven how they arrived at those figures. He pointed out the city is already having to pay Brooks severance pay, which is the same as her annual salary of $184,500, and the city is already being sued by Morris for failing to allow the public to speak in advance of the December 13th terminations. Marrero earned $238,000 a year and was paid $950 a month car allowance. Sanctioned. Robles also pointed out Jones was sanctioned last year by now-retired Ector County District Court Judge James Rush while Jones was representing the city in a lawsuit filed following a garbage truck accident. Rush found Jones filed a frivolous motion, signed pleadings that were groundless and brought in bad faith and contained unsupportable factual and legal allegations, and he filed a motion for the purpose of harassment and interposed for the improper purpose of causing needless increase in the cost of litigation. The judge ordered the city to pay the plaintiff's attorney for the more than 23 hours she spent on her motion for sanctions at a cost of $300 an hour. The city was ordered to pay $5,000 and Jones was ordered to pay $2,050. Believe me, I practiced in front of Judge Rush. I screwed up a lot. But you really have to screw up or be really lazy in order to be sanctioned by Judge Rush, and not only to be chastised by him, but also be ordered to pay money, Robles said. He's cost us money, and y'all's actions have cost us money as well, and I'd really like an explanation from the council as to how y'all are being fiscally responsible, financially responsible, the way y'all promised you would be. When the council moved on to discuss Bernal's contract without responding, Robles said he found it cowardly. The council voted unanimously to award the contract to Jones, and they voted 5-1 to approve Bernal's contract. Council member Steve Thompson voted against Bernal's contract, and Gilbert Vasquez abstained, but both said they didn't believe Bernal was qualified for the position. Prior to being appointed an assistant city manager, Bernal was the head of the billing and collections department. According to Bernal's job application, he started as a Midland Animal Control Officer in October 1994 before becoming the assistant director in July 1996. He left that position in March 2000. He became the Director of Animal Control for the city of Mansfield in April 2001 before accepting the job as Billing and Collection Manager with the city of Odessa in April 2006. Operation Graduation. Norris called out Hoven for the letter he wrote to the judges in June. So he's the mayor. As someone said, this is King Hoven's court. But the question is, do we want mayors or city council people telling our judiciary what to do? At best, Mr. Mayor, you attempted to practice law, and at worst, you attempted to improperly influence judges, Norris said. Norris said if they fired Rodriguez, they would likely go about it the wrong way and get sued again. He says he's already working on 2 or 3 other lawsuits against the city. Hoven told Norris he was asked to write the letter to the judges by law enforcement officials and the organizers of Operation Graduation who felt parents and teens were not being held accountable for providing alcohol to minors and underage drinking. He asked the judges for stiff penalties, but the letter wasn't meant to intimidate. It was meant to keep the community safe, Hoven said. Showell corrected the mayor, pointing out the letter called for maximum penalties. He said the mayor would be disqualified from jury service because jurors must swear they could impose the full range of punishment. I practice all over the state of Texas. I've been in front of many judges, good judges, bad judges. A good judge has integrity, is impartial, is unbiased, and is professional. I can tell you Mr. Rodriguez fits all four of those qualifications, Scholl said. Rodriguez is efficient, and the more cases closed, the more money the city of Odessa makes, Scholl said. He also pointed out Rodriguez is a native Odessan who brings in and houses Jackalope's players and does nothing but good for the city. Juvenile Records. Norris, who is also a civil rights activist, also suggested the council is upset Rodriguez closed juvenile records. Records no one other than the court officials should have access to. Robles, saying he was alarmed at the idea, then made a point of specifically asking each council member if they had gained access to juvenile records. Each answered the question no, but Swanner elaborated a bit. No, I do work for teen court, but I don't access juvenile records, she said. Nobody was accessing juvenile records. How would we have access to juvenile records? Hoven asked. That's a great question because I have to get court orders from a judge to get them, and it would be very concerning, Robles said. Teen court coordinator Rebecca Grisham, who says she prefers to fly under the radar, also spoke out on behalf of the judge. To my knowledge, his most recent review was glowing, but if there are issues or questions pertaining to his handling of things or whatever, I implore you to have those conversations with him, Grisham said. He can explain what has or hasn't been done or why from his perspective, but you have to have those conversations with him in order to get those answers. Rodriguez has not been reported to State Commission on Judiciary Conduct, Grisham said. He is in the middle of his term here, and firing someone in this position could have a lasting repercussion with his career, Grisham said. Please do not remove him from our court, as it can have negative ramifications for not only him, but those of us that work with him. Following the meeting, Grisham said up until 3 years ago, she accessed juvenile records solely to determine if kids were eligible for her program. She no longer has that access and believes Rodriguez has unfairly been caught up in the situation. While Swanner occasionally accessed the files also, Grisham said the new policy prohibits her, Swanner, and other city employees who had access to the files from accessing them. On November 28, 2022, Municipal Court Director Kimberly Joswiak sent an email to Marrero and the staff members of Municipal Court and Teen Court mentioning court security. In it, she said, door security code access was removed for several individuals who no longer work for the city, and for people who work outside the prosecutor's office, judge's office, and court clerk's area. This should help with the situation with the active warrants being viewed or accessed by individuals outside of the court and having to be concerned about what is viewable on your desktop or on your desk by making the court a more secure location now, Joswiak said. She went on, please advise them of that access should they try to enter the clerk's work area. Be kind, we do not want anyone to feel as if their inability to have free access to the clerk's area is a personal statement. Transparency. Rudy Sanchez, a local resident, also spoke during Tuesday's meeting. The way this council has been operating the past couple of months has been pretty non-transparent. Some of the decisions you've made, Mr. Hoven, in the past couple of months, you've ran on transparency, but have been the complete opposite. For you to make decisions firing city managers and attorneys and attempting to fire a judge, it seems more like you're trying to put somebody in place that's just going to go along with what you want them to do, Sanchez said. He reminded the mayor he's not above the law, even if he's doing what he thinks is best for the community. He also warned Councilmember Greg Connell that if he went along with the vote to fire the judge, he would not have his vote in the future. "I will do everything in my power to make sure you won't get any votes in my district, and that's my promise." Favoritism. Odessa Development Corporation Board Chairman Chris Crow, speaking as a citizen, said he is concerned because there haven't been any jury trials in municipal court since before COVID. Crow said he was also concerned that most of those who spoke out on behalf of Rodriguez were attorneys. "I'm sure they have a great working relationship, but I would just be concerned that there might be some favoritism or something there for these attorneys, and maybe that's why you guys are being threatened," Crow said. While the council was in executive session, Scholl and Robles pointed out its defendants who decided whether they want to invoke their right to a jury trial, not judges. In addition, juries cost a lot of money, and if Hoven and Crow were really interested in the city being fiscally responsible, they should be pleased few cases go to trial. "It's a shame what the mayor is trying to do to the judge," Robles said. "That's what happens in dictatorships. It doesn't happen in our country." After the council came out of executive session and voted to table advertising Rodriguez's position, Norris spoke again. Obviously, being facetious, Norris said he was considering applying to Rodriguez's job. "I have no experience, but apparently that doesn't matter to this council, so I think I fit right in for that. I'm not qualified at all," Norris said. "You don't have to pay me almost $200,000 because that's a pay cut, and all right, I'll gladly take that, Mr. Mayor. I won't even troll y'all. If I need to troll y'all, I won't do it like your attack dog, Tim Harry here. I won't do it on Facebook. I'll do it to your face." After the meeting. Following the meeting, Hoven said Bernal and Jones are being paid far below what Brooks and Marrero were, and said Brooks and Marrero also had Odessa Country Club memberships. "I've been accused of not being transparent and not being frugal. I think they were being very frugal in bringing those down," Hoven said. As for Bernal's qualifications, he urged the media to get Bernal's resume. "His resume is impressive. He's been in different aspects of municipal service in other areas, not just the city of Odessa," Hoven said. As for Jones being sanctioned, the mayor said he doesn't know any of the details. Hoven said he also has no idea what Norris was talking about when he mentioned juvenile court records being accessed, and complained he was cut off when he asked Norris to explain. "These are lawyers that wouldn't get away with this type of conduct in their court, but here they disregard the civility of this chamber and continue to mock that it's Hoven's court. That right there, they're not insulting me, they're insulting the system," Hoven said. Although Hoven said he could not discuss what happened during the hour-long executive session, he complained that people are running to conclusions and making up their own narratives. He said Kidd and Rodriguez have staggered appointments, and they don't know whose starting point is when and when their ending points. Rodriguez graduated from Odessa High School and the University of Texas. He received his law degree from St. Mary's University School of Law in San Antonio in 2013 and joined the court as the associate judge in July 2020. According to the State Bar of Texas, he has no public disciplinary history. According to the Texas Municipal Courts Education Center, most municipal judges serve two-year terms. Regardless if written agreements are utilized to specify compensation, benefits, and expectations, it is important for city officials to distinguish municipal judges from contract employees and at-will employees. Texas appellate courts have held that municipal judges are not employees, the center wrote in January 2020. The center continued, because municipal judges are not hired, they are either appointed or elected. A municipal judge cannot be fired. Like other public officials, however, municipal judges may be removed from office. The center also notes that under Texas law, a municipal judge may be removed from office by the city's governing body for incompetence, corruption, misconduct, or malfeasance in office. A municipal judge may also be removed from office by the Supreme Court of Texas through formal proceedings initiated by the State of Commission on Judicial Conduct upon a finding of judicial misconduct. Hoven acknowledged Rodriguez was placed on the agenda to be evaluated in October, but said it was over his objections. Kidd was also evaluated in October. He, Rodriguez, Brooks, Marrero, and City Secretary Norma Aguilar Grimaldo were on the December 13th agenda to be evaluated again, but those discussions were tabled. Brooks and Marrero were terminated under another agenda item the same night, but Kidd and Aguilar Grimaldo have not been placed on the agenda since that time. In other business, council members agreed to begin reviewing master plans with city staff and to start holding town hall meetings to discuss prioritizing the city's needs and discuss ways to meet those needs. Thompson and Connell will be looking at roads. Mata and Swanner will be taking up a sports complex, and Vasquez and Chris Haney will be looking at water and sewer systems. Unsung heroes, housekeeping helps keep MCH going. Some of the unsung heroes at Medical Center Hospital are the housekeeping crew, part of Environmental Services. The department works 24/7, 365, has very little turnover, and has a limited time to do their work. Director of Environmental Services, Joe Montez, said they run three shifts a day with the bulk of the work during the second shift. When Montez arrived about 11 years ago, they had 58 employees. Now they have 96 full-time employees, and the department is considered essential along with physicians and nursing staff. We definitely have grown substantially, Montez said. They clean the hospital, operating rooms, and clinics. There are three shifts per day, and staffing levels have grown substantially. The first shift includes more customer service, patient-facing housekeepers. The second shift are the workhorses and the graveyard shift. Monta said the first shift is from 7 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. The second shift runs 3 p.m. to midnight, third shift 10:30 p.m. to 7 a.m. Our first shift is very much geared toward patient care, unit cares. There's a lot of our housekeepers that are pretty much customer service based. Then also, they're cleaning rooms with the patient inside the room. We definitely can't do much cleaning in the rooms with the patient in there, as for example, if the patient leaves, then they'll say it's a discharge room, Montez said. We usually clean anywhere from 75 to 120 checkout rooms in a 24-hour period, Montez said. Each housekeeper cleans 8 to 12 rooms. They have regular patient cleans and isolation room cleans for patients who have C. diff and MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, which causes staph infections. They have to use different chemicals. They have a little longer to clean, and they also have to throw out all of the paper products, whether they were used or not, as germs can adhere to the paper. Then they would have to restock. Housekeeping also cleans the operating rooms and bathrooms. Despite the time limitations, they need to clean the rooms properly, including changing the sheets and disinfecting. But they also need to clean in the allotted time, as you might have people in the emergency room that have been waiting for a patient room for hours, for example. For a regular room clean, it's about 35 minutes. They have terminal cleans for operating rooms and cleans at the end of the day. They use chemicals as well as UV disinfection in the ORs. On average, operating rooms take about 65 minutes to clean, and the housekeepers wear Tyvek suits. The chemicals used didn't change, and Monta said they also killed COVID-19. Management and OR management check every day to make sure they're all up on standards, and if they're not, it's corrected. They also have a floor crew that works on a nightly basis, cleaning, sanitizing, and shining floors for all 978,000 square feet of them. That includes the hospital and the clinics. The hospital is the staging area for the environmental service staff, but they also have people that handle the urgent care clinics, so not everyone has to report to the hospital on a daily basis. We do have a great management team, and then also we have a supervisor that goes out to all of our clinics every day, checks on our staff, makes sure that everyone's doing well, makes sure that everyone's safe, Montes said. They typically send the trusted, experienced housekeepers to the outlying clinics. Turnover is only 13% in the environmental services compared to the 35% national average. They have very good employee engagement in the department, structured management, and very good employee morale. I believe we're one of the highest departments with the biggest number. We're at a 96% employee engagement in a department with almost 100 employees. We're one of the most employee-friendly departments in the hospital, Montes said. Director of Public Relations Trevor Tankersley said, they put out surveys to rate other departments and interactions with them, and that's almost 100%. People are very honest too, Tankersley said. They are very well thought of. Other hospitals reach out to him about how they keep people when those other facilities are in Houston or Dallas. It's putting our employees up there with our patients and making sure that our employees are taken care of, making sure that they have what they need to complete their job, making sure that they have their time that they need to rest and the time with their families. That's big right now. We are focusing on that, Montes said. They tailor employee hours to go with their schedules at home, and they also hire a lot of people by word of mouth. Our benefit is because even though we work a lot, we are a 24-hour department, we are 365. That's something that we can use to our advantage, even though it's a lot of working for us. So I have three kids, and also I take care of my mom at night. Well, that's great. Can you work with graveyard shift? The graveyard shift is 10:30 p.m. to 7 a.m. The hospital chief operating officer, Matt Collins, was a floor tech about 10 years ago, cleaning, sanitizing, and buffing floors on the third shift, Montes said. He always offers his services. He's always like, hey, listen, if you're going to need help, you call me. I'm going to come jump in, Montes said. He added that the employees help with the hiring process a lot, and they don't even realize it. That's our biggest asset to hiring is actually employee referrals, family members, ex-coworkers, friends, neighbors. That's where we get the majority of our employees, Montes said. He tells people when they have time off to take it and spend time with their families. If you don't need to work overtime, that's fine. Don't sign up for it. I'm not telling you. You have to. You need to rest, Montes said. They have two cleaning disinfection technologies that they use. One of them is our UV light. We've actually had that technology since about 2013. When a new generation comes out, of course, we have to buy into the system. We want to be up there with the state-of-the-art equipment, especially for disinfection. It's something that no one thinks about, no one talks about, but everyone wants to have. We do have our UV light systems. Those primarily go in our patient rooms and also in our ORs, operating rooms, and also in our isolation rooms, so COVID, C. diff, MRSA. When the patient leaves, it gets cleaned and disinfected by our employees, and then also we go in with our technology. We go in with our UV light, and then also we also have a new tool in our arsenal. That came out around the COVID time. It's actually called electrostatic disinfection. It's what kind of is generally referred to as Mr. or Foggers. Very little particles. Also looks like smoke, but it's actually little droplets that basically flood the room with disinfectant, Montes said. The one MCH uses is medical grade. Each one of those little droplets has an electrostatic charge to it. So from where Trevor is standing, if we were going to treat this room, he would treat it from where he's standing. It's so cool the way it works. He would basically flood this room with this smoke and then this smoke. Each little particle is electrically charged. It will adhere to the surface evenly. And then even when you don't see underneath the desk, on the side of the desk, because it's electrostatically charged, so then those little droplets, they won't gather on top of each other. They'll go hand in hand with each other evenly all around the room, Montez said. He added that it's super cool and they use it every day. Tankersley said you might expect it more at a high-tech company, but it's here in Odessa. The general public knows it as Misters. I know it as medical-grade electrostatic disinfection because that's exactly what it is. I love that stuff, Montez said. He added that they use it every day in Odessa and you might expect it at a more high-tech company. Broker contract to sell Coliseum set to expire. Fawcett calls contract sideshow and circus. 6 months ago, the hottest ticket in town was a standing room only spot at the Ector County Commissioner's Courtroom. Residents flooded the July 26 meeting as they watched the Ector County Commissioner's Court decide 3-2 to enter into a proposed real estate broker contract between Ector County and J.L. Heritage Copper Key Realty for the potential sale of the Ector County Coliseum. Since that decision took place, the court hasn't openly discussed the potential sale of the Ector County Coliseum during any of its regularly scheduled or special meetings, and two of the three votes in favor of the decision are no longer at the court. Copper Key Realty confirmed with the Odessa American over the phone on Wednesday afternoon. The six-month contract is set to expire Thursday. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett, who was sworn in on January 2nd, called the decision to enter into a proposed real estate broker contract for the potential sale of the Ector County Coliseum, a sideshow and circus. I think that shows that this was never a serious proposal, Fawcett said, about the broker contract expiring. I never thought there were any firm figures or firm numbers. I never knew who this company was, and there were a lot of questions around it. Previous Odessa American stories have reported the offer for the Coliseum is between $20 to $25 million. Ector County Commissioner for Precinct 2, Greg Simmons, agreed after the July 26th meeting with the number that had been reported. The Ector County Appraisal District lists the total market value for the Coliseum as a little over $28 million as of Wednesday morning. Fawcett said the county would have been silly to sell around market value. From the early numbers that I was hearing, the only numbers I was hearing was a little over $30 million. As I said before, that's a silly proposition, Fawcett said. We can't build a juvenile facility for $24 million right now, but we are going to sell the Coliseum along with 34 acres in Barns A through G, as well as a brand new rodeo arena. It's a silly proposition, and I don't think it was ever a serious conversation. Despite what he believed to be a sideshow and a circus, Fawcett believes the positive byproduct from that broker contract help ignite interest to decide what direction to take the Coliseum. Fawcett said, "We haven't had an in-depth conversation about the future of the Coliseum in a very, very long time, and I think it's time to have that." On Wednesday afternoon, Fawcett floated the idea of putting together a committee, much like the library committee, that would include Coliseum stakeholders and members from the public that would be chosen by each of the five seats on the court. The stakeholders could include Odessa Jackalopes, Chuckwagon Gang, Mary Marketplace, Permian Basin International Oil Show, Sandhill Stock Show and Rodeo, and other users of the Coliseum. The Ector County judge believes one of the first improvements would be to have multiple cooking stations through the venue. There's currently one, and he would like to expand that to three more. Fawcett said the additional cooking stations would lead to local restaurants staking a concession spot in the Coliseum. It would be ideal if we had local restaurants, whether they are food trucks or brick and mortars, to come in and have one of those points of sale to where they could sell their products there, Fawcett said. There's a win-win for everybody in the community to diversify the type of food that we offer, and it enhances the overall experience. Though the Coliseum is one of many buildings owned by Ector County, Fawcett said he believes the current members of the court are concerned about all county-owned assets. We firmly believe the commissioners and myself are very concerned about the assets that we do have in the county and figuring out what is the future of these facilities, whether it's our buildings or courthouse or annex or new jail expansion or new juvenile detention facility or library, he said. All of these buildings were built about the same time, so they are all coming up for either new rebuilds or remodels. We need to have serious discussions about them. I have a good court who is going to focus on these issues, and I hope to lead those discussions because I'm passionate about these issues as well.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.